You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Let's go to Florida. Or maybe not, because the NAACP has issued a travel advisory this week warning African Americans that the state of Florida is, quote unquote, hostile to them after a series of moves by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to, quote, erase Black history and to restrict diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in Florida schools, end quote. A spokesperson for DeSantis has called the move a stunt. So why talk about it here on Radio Boston? Well, you might recall that Wellesley professor Kelly Carter Jackson was headed to Florida just last week to participate in a 24-hour teach-in there. And her lecture topic, Why Teaching Black History Matters. Kelly Carter Jackson joins us now for our monthly history and culture conversation. And she brought a colleague, Carrie Greenidge, author and assistant professor in the Department of Studies in Race, Colonialism, and Diaspora at Tufts University. Kelly, welcome back.
Hi.
And Carrie, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, so thank you for having me so much.
Great to have you both. Kelly, I've got to start with you and find out how the teach-in went. 24 hours in Florida, some in person, some virtual. How did it go?
It was great. It was really, really great. I think we were all pulling from a place of exhaustion. I spoke at 11 p.m. at night. I flew in at about 8 o'clock at night, so literally went from the airport straight to the church, Greater Mount Zion AME, where the event was being held. And even though everyone was tired, you could still feel the energy in the room. And even online, people were on YouTube. It was being live streamed on YouTube, chiming in, putting in their comments and their, you know, like, bravo, and yeah, we're with you. So that felt really good. And I just talked about why Black History Matters. I took a course that I teach that's like 12 weeks and shrunk it down into 45 minutes and spoke. And it was really exciting and really gratifying to do. I think, you know, our first work is to educate people, and our second job is to empower people so that they can take that information and knowledge and then, you know, get mobilized and go out and do this work.
So, Carrie Greenidge, were professors from around the country rooting on this group in Florida? Were you watching? Were you aware? Were you cheering folks on?
Well, definitely. I mean, when I found out this was happening, I was cheering on the fact that we tend to think of professors and of the professoriate as being somehow separate from communities. And there are many professors, Professor Carter Jackson is one of them, myself is one of them, who really believe that their scholarship and work has connections to living, breathing people who are alive today. So I was just excited to see that that was enacted in this teach-in, that, you know, you can be a person in a community in Florida and you're not necessarily separate from some of the leading minds, and you don't have to be, right? That this knowledge is actually something that people should have access to.
So, Kelly Carter Jackson, I'll turn back to you for a minute. When I heard yesterday about the NAACP advisory, you were the first person I thought of because you were just in Florida, coming from Massachusetts, as a Black woman professor teaching Black history. And I wonder how that advisory resonated with you. And I wondered, you know, what your experience was like being in Florida in this moment when you were present to teach in, essentially in protest to moves happening in the Florida legislature.
It was wild. You know, I asked the organizers. So the Institute of Common Power put this together. Dr. Terry Scott, Dr. Yehua Williams organized this entire event. And one of the questions I asked them was, will there be security? Because I knew that, you know, that Florida and really across the country, shootings are common. And I was worried about, you know, the speaker's safety. I think a lot of people were worried about that. You know, when I showed up, there were two police cars sitting outside the church, which brought me a little bit of comfort. But everyone in the church was wonderful. The hospitality of the church was incredible. I really got to feel a sense of camaraderie. Like, I met people who were there from Seattle and people who had flew in from Maryland. And so I met a teacher who had lost his job, you know, trying to teach diversity and equity and inclusion at his institution in Florida and was fired because of that. And now he's scrambling, trying to find a job as another English professor. So I got to really meet people who are doing this work on the ground. People are in solidarity. And that brought me just a lot of courage and encouragement. But, you know, I don't know when I will go back to Florida again. It certainly won't be for pleasure. It certainly won't be for leisure. If I go back again, it's an act of protest to be in solidarity with other people. But no, I won't be going to Disney World anytime soon. And I think that's important. I think people have to take a stand, not just to boycott the state, but also to stand in solidarity with the people who are there on the work, trying to do the grunt work in Florida, because we can't abandon them either. They need our support and our help. And that happens all across the country.
We're talking with Professors Kelly Carter-Jackson and Carrie Greenidge, who are at Wellesley and Tufts University, respectively. And where I want to go in this conversation is this increasing move to essentially censor the subjects that you teach. And I do want to get there, but I have to take a second and pause, turn to you, Carrie Greenidge. Kelly Carter-Jackson just went down to Florida in 2023, to Florida from Massachusetts, and mm-hmm. had to say, will there be security there?
Yes.
And
go ahead.
No, pick it up.
I mean, I think that's the world that we're living in. I mean, I think that we are in a time that is reminiscent of times that have occurred before. So I always want to preface this by saying that this is what happens when you're speaking. I hate the term of speaking truth to power. It happens when you're revealing histories that people don't want to learn, and that people really see what true history can do is it can empower the people you don't want to be empowered, right? And mm-hmm. So I want to say I'm surprised, but I am not surprised, just given the history that we know of people who actually are speaking the truth about systems, about communities, about the reason why the country looks and feels the way that it does today. When you start to speak that truth, there are many people who realize that truth is going to be its own act of resistance, and they don't want to see that.
I'm glad you emphasized both pieces of that, both the historical context, Carrie Greenidge, and the moment that we're in. And I want to note it, and not in a holier-than-thou way. You know, the Anti-Defamation League just comes out with a report that between 21 and 2022, hate crimes in Massachusetts are up by 30%, and by one measure, we're second only to the state of Texas. So I'm not taking a holier-than-thou stance. What I'm trying to do is take a contextual stance, and I feel like you did that there, Professor Carrie Greenidge. Yeah.
Say that, like, it's so important that one of the things I talked about in my talk is that, like, the North has no moral high ground. Like, this is a national crime, a national sin, if you will. And that anytime we think that we can't be Florida, we are incredibly in danger, because Florida is the Simon Says of the country. What is happening in Florida is happening in Texas. It's happening in Iowa. It's happening all across the country. They're censoring books, banning books, banning DEI curriculum. And so Massachusetts, could easily be in those same circumstances. I've seen locally in Massachusetts people who are running for school board who have these anti-CRT approaches. And so it's not just in Florida.
And I would add to that, Tiziana and Kelly, I mean, I think that this holier-than-thou thing, I mean, look, we have to pay attention to what's happening to local school boards. And people, this is what happened in Florida years ago, was that nobody was paying attention to local races until you get people on school boards, you get people on town committees who have a concerted effort of what they see as preserving, white supremacist thinking within their town. And in terms of the hate crimes report that you cited and that the Anti-Defamation League found, paying attention to that in the state of Massachusetts, where, the rate of anti-Semitism and public anti-Semitism on people should give us all pause on how these views can then be adopted in terms of how we teach our children in libraries and that sort of thing. So we cannot take the ground in Massachusetts of somehow we are a quote unquote liberal place. And look at Florida, they're backwards. I mean, this is happening all over the place and in all school districts.
And I'll note for our listeners that tomorrow on Radio Boston, we will dive further into that new report from the Anti-Defamation League on hate, and we'll have further conversation there. So as you know, Kelly Carter-Jackson, we speak with you every month, right? We have this conversation, and part of the reason that we wanted to put the two of you together this month was actually an off-the-cuff conversation, Carrie, that you and I had, talking about experiences that people who teach in race, who teach in Black history, who teach in Africana studies, et cetera, are beginning to have traveling around the country and receiving pushback on your actual content. So I wanted to talk to the two of you about that, because that's sort of the next front. And I'm going to use as sort of a device for that a really striking story that was reported in both the New York Times and Rolling Stone, which was a change in a lesson plan in a publication that was then rolled back. But it was proposed a change in a lesson plan in a publication in Florida based on Florida's new legislation that had removed the explanation of race for why Rosa Parks had to sit in the back of the bus. Because you weren't supposed to do that anymore. Now, again, the publication said, wait a minute, that's an overstretch. We're going to put that back in. But that kind of pressure to how do you teach Rosa Parks if you don't teach that segregation was the reason she had to be in the back of the bus and then refused to go to the back of the bus? But this is a phenomenon we're seeing.
Yeah, you can't teach Rosa Parks without talking about race.
Well, I think for a broader sense, so many of us would be appalled by that, and rightly so. But I think there's so much of American history that you can't teach without teaching about the roots of why something is the way it is. And so I think that's an example, and it's a horrible example. But I think there's the way we teach the American Revolution, the way we teach the structure and the creation of the Constitution of the United States, right? You can make a similar argument that how are you making and talking about those issues without talking about the actual roots of where those come from, right? And that's sort of the third rail. I think a lot of people like Kelly and I who do this work, a lot of our friends who are, preeminent scholars in their field, that's what they seek, and that's what we seek to do, is find these historical explanations for some of these inequities that exist. And the pushback against them just generally in terms of you as a professor, in terms of students who come to classes and kind of want to play test the professor, which I've had happen places, So there's definitely this pushback against any type of history that is going to counter the narratives that people already have about the country as it is.
Kelly Carter,
it's wild.
Yeah.
Well, it's just wild to me because I think it's not just about Rosa Parks. Like, you can't teach housing without talking about race, because redlining is central to that. You can't talk about public health without talking about race. There's so many things that we think are somewhat benign that are intrinsically connected and tethered to race and racism in America. I think that, in Florida, they had banned a textbook that talked about George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. And people were up in arms about that. But my question is, okay, as a historian, we try to look at things that are no later than like the past or no earlier than the past 20 years. You could talk about Rodney King and the beating of Rodney King. Students will easily connect it to George Floyd. But like, there are things like the LA riots and the uprisings in the 1960s that you just cannot talk about without talking about why people are angry, why people were upset, why people riot. And this promotes critical thinking. Like, we want all of our children. I don't know any parent that does not want their child to be a critical thinker, to question things, to analyze things, to think deeply about what it is that they are learning. So I think we should all be alarmed.
So one of the questions that then comes up for me, as we see, for example, disparities in states in how they approach reproductive health care, we begin to hear conversations that say physicians in training will not train in certain states. They won't go to those states to practice. And therefore, they will also have fewer hospitals where they can train. That will affect the pipeline of physicians coming up, et cetera. What about faculty? What about professors? What about new minds in the subjects that the two of you teach and related subjects? Will we see a tightening of the pipeline because there will be fewer places to train, fewer places to teach, fewer places where you can share and publish your ideas? And can we, if that is the case, rely on Massachusetts, which is supposed to be an academic mecca, to continue to be a place where those thoughts and ideas can develop and where people can train? Carrie.
Well, I think what you're saying is absolutely true. I think Massachusetts as being a place that, infrastructure wise and economics wise is tied so much to higher education. I think having, colleges, and I'm thinking of UMass Boston and institutions that get funding by the state of investing in Black studies, for instance, ethnic studies, for instance, Africana studies, right? Holocaust studies, right? And really, you know, the assault on the humanities in general, making those fields of study kind of the anchor by which then, you know, Massachusetts colleges and universities, public colleges and universities in particular, can become a mecca for those people. But I will say that, you know, we have to, as Kelly alluded to earlier, we also have to support our friends and colleagues who continue to work in colleges and universities that are under attack in other parts of the country, mm-hmm. where they're being fired or they're being censored, or they're, you know, they're not being renewed. The contingent faculty crisis we have in academia, their contracts are not being renewed. And really, as academics who have some sort of power, whether it's tenure, whatever it is, that we are supporting those professors, because they'll continue mm-hmm. to exist. What will happen is they'll continue to get pushback from those places. And so making sure there's a concerted effort to support them in various ways.
And Kelly, last word to you.
Yeah, I just, this is concerning to me because it's systemic in that fewer and fewer people are going to college, you know, because of the pandemic, because how college is so expensive, you have less and less enrollment numbers. And we've seen this as a trend across the country. And so it's even more important that for people who choose not to go to college, that their K through 12 education includes African-American history and Native American history, that this is not just treated as some sort of elective that, oh, you can take it if you want to, but that no, if K through 12 is what most people will get, that fewer and fewer people will get that higher education or college degree, then it is imperative that we get this into the textbooks at younger and younger ages so that everyone has access to this information.
All right. Professor Kelly Carter-Jackson is Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Wellesley. Professor Carrie Greenidge is Author and Assistant Professor in the Department of Studies in Race, Colonialism, and Diaspora at Tufts University. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you so much for having me.